On this week's 51%, we speak with an author of a book about difficult women.
All of these women, on balance, were more interested in what they felt was true about them than in what the culture expected of them.
And hear from leaders of women's groups about abuse allegations that took down a state attorney general. I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. This is who I am. You can like it or not. You can love me or leave me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop, no, no. Best-selling author Karen Carbo's latest book features 29 women who refuse to choose between being true to themselves or being accepted and loved. The book is entitled In Praise of Difficult Women, Life Lessons from 29 Heroines Who Dared to Break the Rules. Carbo writes about Frida Kahlo, Nora Ephron, Hillary Clinton, Carrie Fisher, Elizabeth Taylor, Helen Gurley Brown, Laverne Cox, Lena Dunham, and others. All, she says, are spirited rule breakers who charted their way with little regard for social or cultural expectations. I asked her why this topic for a book.
You know, Allison, it's actually a very long story. I've always been drawn to stories of women who have lived incredible lives. When I was a little girl, before I could even read, my parents had a subscription to National Geographic, and it was sort of during the height of Jane Goodall and when they were covering her. And I remember looking at her in Africa with the chimps and just being swept away. And this was, you know, before I even started kindergarten. So I've always been drawn to these stories and have always, you know, pursued the biographies of interesting women. And then when I was in my first semester in college, my mother died quite unexpectedly. And as it turned out in my family, I became at the age of 17 the oldest woman in my family. I had no grandmothers or aunts or cousins or sisters or anybody who was older than me. And at that moment in time, I just found a lot of solace. I discovered Martha Gellhorn then. It was a time when Frida Kahlo was coming into the fore. And, you know, they provided me with inspiration and solace and a way to go forward in life, because literally, I was literally on my own. So this has been, you know, a book that it has quite a genesis, a decades-long genesis. And, you know, like I said, this is nothing that I kind of sat there and thought, now I can write about difficult women, because this has been a passion of mine for quite some time.
Despite longer-range planning, the book is coming out at the time it is, and you couldn't have known that, but maybe you could talk about the context now.
I mean, no one had an idea, I think, when, you know, when the book was first contracted in 2015, we imagined that we would be celebrating the first woman president, and this was going to be kind of a callback to all the women that sort of led up to this amazing moment in American history. So, of course, you know, things didn't quite turn out that way. And they just happened to put it on the publication list for spring of 2018. And I think we could never have imagined that we would be on the tail end of hashtag Me Too and hashtag Time's Up and so on and so forth. So, you know, it is a good time, I think, because here's the deal. You know, it's wonderful to have, you know, a call to action. And it's wonderful to have sort of women who are well-known and they're stepping forward and they're being ferocious and they're being outspoken. But the fact of the matter is every single day we all have to get up and floss our teeth and drink our smoothies and carry on. And I think the way we do this best is reading about how other women do it and have done it throughout time. Like, how do we, to use an Oprah quote, how do we be our best selves, which of course includes being true to ourselves, which often renders us quote unquote difficult.
Karen, before we dive into speaking about some of the women you've written about, let's talk about using the word difficult in the title. Difficult can have a negative connotation, and I'm wondering how you hope it's perceived.
Well, it can have a negative connotation, and I'm hoping that, like nasty woman, it becomes just another word that we embrace, that we say, of course I'm difficult. You know, would you expect anything else? I think it's you know, the word is levied at women because we do feel the pinch of it and we do feel the sting of it. And the point of it is to put you back in your place, right? It's like, stay in your lane, woman. Don't be difficult. Don't inconvenience us. Don't upset us. So I think if we no longer feel it as a slap, but just as an adjective that's accurate, you know, we will take back some of the power of it. I mean, I was called difficult when I was in kindergarten. You know, my kindergarten teacher, I was having some problems switching from painting to story time, and I pitched a fit. My parents came in, and my teacher said, you know, it was interesting, not the behavior. She did not say Karen had a temper tantrum when it was time to stop painting. She said, Karen insists on being difficult. And I never knew, really, it took me like 20 years to actually figure out what that meant, because I was very confused when I was a kid, because I thought, no, I just want to finish my painting. The point is that, yes, it's a word that's put on us when we, you know, we're not going along with the program. We're not honoring the cultural expectation of us to be nice and pleasant and consensus builders and not inconveniencing anybody else. The second we do that, not all the time, but often we risk being called difficult.
How did you select the women you did? You know, maybe you had the first three or four, and then you had to give it a little more thought. So maybe you could take us through the process.
Well, there are 29 women, and as you might imagine, it was a long process, and the roster changed, you know, dozens of times easily. My bottom line for me was it had to be somebody who I was a little in love with. I was in love with her life, her choices, the glamour, you know, her sassiness, and she had to be inspirational to me. So for all the women that were considered, I had to think, like, do I have this heart connection with this person? Because I've written enough to know that unless you have that level of fascination, it'll just be like a book report, you know. And especially because, you know, I had 29 of these essays to write, and so I had to be passionate. So that was the bottom line. Beyond that, I wanted there to be diversity, and you know, I wanted there to be, you know, racial diversity and ethnic diversity. There are women from other countries, socioeconomic diversity, sexual orientation. I really wanted there to be diversity, and I wanted there to be diversity among personality types. You know, there isn't just one kind of difficult woman. I wanted there to be introverts and extroverts and makers and doers and talkers and thinkers, and just a whole kaleidoscope of kind of the female character. So it got complicated, because as the book started really taking shape and the slots became kind of fewer and fewer, it was like, okay, who, you know, what do I really want to represent here? What do I feel is missing? What do I feel, you know, who do I definitely feel like I need to include? So it was a very long process, but the bottom line was that they really had to inspire me. It was just quite simple.
And as you explained, they do run the gamut, but maybe you could just talk about a few.
All right. Well, you know, it's interesting because there are some that are perhaps obvious. So Gloria Steinem is in the book. And I think we all, you know, have an understanding of why she would be and have been called difficult. So she was sort of like one of the banner carriers. But there are also people like Amelia Earhart, who was a girlhood idol, who was actually quite introverted. And the introverted, difficult women are the ones that really, really fascinate me, because I think when we think of difficult women, we think of women who are sassy and who speak out and who are leading the rallies and writing the books and you know, talking. Amelia was she was a little shy. She was very polite, you know, and very well-bred and very kind. But she was one of those women that basically just did exactly what she wanted to do. And she would still be polite, and she would still be nice, and she would just disappear and go to the airport and get in her plane and fly away, like quite literally. So that's one sort of difficult woman. Another sort of difficult woman, which I think people have been surprised by, is Elizabeth Taylor. One of the reasons why I included her is because she was born in the 1930s and became an actress at a time when essentially actresses were sort of owned by the Hollywood studios. Their behavior was dictated by their publicists. They were supposed to be, you know, very not as sort of out there and female and sexual as Elizabeth Taylor was. She was one of the first actresses who basically said, never complain, never explain, I'm doing exactly what I want, and you just are going to have to deal with it. So that was her younger years. Then when she became an icon in middle age, she was one of the first people to speak out about the importance of raising money and awareness for AIDS. All of her managers and agents and friends said, do not touch that. It's going to put people off of you. Nobody wants to think about it. It's the gay cancer. It was all of that. And she said, you know what? My friends are dying of this. And I really don't care what it does to my reputation. I'm going to use my power and use my voice to make people aware of this. So she kind of has a double difficult nature to her.
So talk about more some of the women with whom you're fascinated. Of course, all 29, but just a few. I mean, we all have our favorites. We can't hide that.
It's true. It's true. We do all have our favorites. Another one of the women that surprises people is Evie Sedgwick. And, you know, it's because I think, and this is so interesting, Allison, because people, when they hear difficult, they think it also means somebody who has, you know, discovered something in science or run for president or, you know, something that is really constructive. And that for a woman to actually be ambitious and do something that's constructive and productive, like, she would have to be difficult, and that's true. The reason why I included Edie, besides the fact that I have just been fascinated with her since I was in college, and I cannot look away when I see pictures of her, when I read her story, and I actually surveyed some friends of mine, and they're like, I know Edie Sedgwick. And I really had to bear down and kind of figure out what it was about her. And Edie was just Edie. And I think all of us would love to be loved and appreciated for exactly who we are, flaws and all. Even if our flaws are Homeric, even if our flaws are gargantuan, she was never one to try and improve herself, change herself. She sort of just inhabited the Edie world. And her charisma and sort of the tragic family she came from and her whole story, I just think we are attracted to it because she was utterly 100% who she was. No, well, it's interesting because, and I wrote about this in her essay, is that it's been often said that the Star Wars saga is like the hero's journey. But the reason why women aren't that interested in it is because it's not the heroine's journey. They say in pop culture, the heroine's journey is Dirty Dancing. Nobody puts baby in the corner. And that is Edie. Nobody put Edie in the corner. And I think all of us would like to not be put in the corner.
You know, you've picked such disparate women here among the 29, and apart from the obvious that the connecting thread is they're all difficult, what is another thread here for you?
Well, that's an excellent question, and I've been pondering it, because my interests are pretty ecumenical, as it were. You know, I'm interested in a lot of things, and I'm interested in a lot of, you know, different walks of life that are represented here. I think if I was pressed, I would have to say that all of these women, on balance, were more interested in what they felt was true about them than in what the culture expected of them. Now, it's not to say that they would never, you know, be upset if somebody was disapproving of them or whatever, but they didn't sort of contort their personalities to make other people happy. And I think, I mean, certainly for myself, you know, when I think of some of the wisdom I got from my mother, you know, a lot of it was, oh, don't let people get upset. If you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. You know, and there was this way of, like, my mother, I think, knew I was going to be kind of the strong-willed female, and she was always trying to kind of find a way to sort of tamp that down and sort of mold that so I could move through the world in a way that I would be more acceptable. And I think my women were having none of that. Whoever they were, everybody else was going to have to kind of just get with the program or move along the road.
So why 29?
It was originally 30, to be honest. And it was something that my editor, because the whole time I was writing the book over years, you know, we sort of were having this ongoing conversation about who was in, who was out. Do we have too many writers? Because, you know, writers are always fascinated by other writers, but not so much the rest of the world, as it turns out. That she thought was interesting to look at was Indira Gandhi. And I was already sort of put back on my heels. I'm like, first of all, I don't know too much about her. Like, she doesn't spring to mind when I'm just rattling off women that I'm, but I will, because frankly, I'm an accommodating woman, not a difficult woman. Or most of the time I'm accommodating. I said, you know, I will check it out. I will check her out and see if I can feel that feeling that I require to move forward. And, you know, she certainly was a strong woman. She certainly, I think, dragged India into the modern age. But she also was a proponent of sterilization for her own people. And that was just the deal breaker. I said, you know what, that's a bridge too far for me. I can't find any way into that to make it interesting or inspiring or, you know. So there we were. And I said, listen, 29 is a great number. And I thought, you know, I've written a book about difficult women, and now I am going to be a difficult woman. 29 is a great number. It's a prime number. Years ago, they used to say, don't trust anybody over 30. So 29 is really a way better number than 30. And so I sold 29 as the number.
I love it. Indira Gandhi forces odd number for difficult women. It's great. So who do you hope, switching gears, who do you hope is your audience for this book? Who do you hope picks this up?
Writers always say everyone, which is, of course, you know, the sort of saddest answer. No, not everyone is going to pick up your book. But, you know, I've had this a bit on my book tour, is I'll have mothers and daughters come together. And they buy multiple copies. Like, they each buy one because the daughter's going away to college, and then they buy one for their aunt, and they buy one for their cousin. So, you know, that's sort of a lovely moment. But really, in my fondest wishes, it's women, young women in their 20s who have just, you know, popped out of college, and they're, you know, they're looking forward to what their life is going to be like. And I have been fortunate to have, interestingly enough, a couple women who had just gotten into medical school showed up at my events, and they were so frightened. And I said, and then they had this book, and they were said, I was reading it through while you were talking, and I just feel so inspired. If they did it, I could do it, you know. And these girls, I said, you have everything. Just have confidence and don't worry about it. You know, they're amazing, these young women. So I guess that would be my hope, is that they would all have this book in the bookcase.
So Cheryl Strayed of Wild fame, book and movie, writes your foreword. Why?
Well, it's interesting because I have known Cheryl for about 20 years. We're neighbors. I've known her since we were teaching and writing programs together, and we were having ramen for dinner. Like, I have known her for such a long time, and I couldn't think of anybody else. I knew she knew Difficult Woman. I knew the story about Myrtle, and I just couldn't think of anybody else who would. And she knows me very well. In fact, the story I told you about my mother dying and my embracing all these iconic women who were in the public eye as sort of surrogate mothers was something that Cheryl suggested to me. I didn't know. I just thought I had an interest in history and women's stories. And she said, don't you see, because we both lost our mothers young, she said, you are trying to find women who can guide you. And I was like, oh. There was just no question in my mind that I was going to ask her, and if she said yes, I would be delighted.
So who else is in the book?
There's a few funny women. I mean, Nora Ephron's in it. She's funny. Carrie Fisher, Amy Poehler. And I think it's always really important to never forget that anytime a woman resorts to, Margaret Cho's in there too, that anytime women resort to humor, it's pretty transgressive and provocative. And so, of course, there would be funny people in the book as well.
Karen, would you expand on this? Because even the women you just mentioned are very different in their humor.
Right. Well, I think, you know, in particular, you know, if you look at Carrie Fisher and Margaret Cho, they have used humor to discuss things that are pretty intimate and serious for them. You know, Carrie Fisher, rest in peace, long before there was the internet and social media, and people were sort of sharing everything there is to share, she was quite upfront about her addiction issues and her mental struggles with her mental health. And she was also funny about it. And I just think that's just sort of a double whammy, that it's very hard for people to kind of absorb that not only are you telling us, you know, these things about yourself that hurt you and that you struggle with, but you're also so damn funny. So, you know, that was sort of Carrie Fisher's mark for me. And Margaret Cho, similarly, you know, she talks about, you know, American Asian culture and the prejudice that exists there, and her own experience in Hollywood having her short-lived sitcom where no Koreans worked on the crew or were on the show. It was just sort of any attractive Asian that they could get. And she talks about that a lot as well, as you know, in addition to sort of gender things and so on and so forth. And she's really out there and very funny. So I just think when women, you know, are not only sort of saying things that make people uncomfortable, but they're also very funny. It's just, they're always difficult. I think you don't even have to, like, that always checks the box.
Karen, thank you so much for your time. Anything else?
Difficult is the new black. That's just what I want to say.
That was author Karen Carbo talking about her book, In Praise of Difficult Women, Life Lessons from 29 Heroines Who Dared to Break the Rules. It is published by National Geographic Books. Fallout continues following allegations that shocked many New Yorkers. Disgraced former State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman was known as a longtime champion of women's rights, and that's why leaders of women's groups are still trying to make sense of the allegations that the man who occupied the state's highest-ranking law enforcement office was a serial domestic violence abuser. 51%'s Karen DeWitt reports.
I'm extremely proud to stand here today with an incredible group of leaders in the fight to protect survivors.
Just about 6 months ago, Judy Harris Kluger, who runs an anti-domestic violence agency, stood beside Schneiderman, where he announced an agreement with a Brooklyn hospital to no longer bill sexual assault survivors for forensic rape examinations.
In recent months, we've begun a long overdue reckoning with our culture of violence and silence.
Schneiderman resigned amid allegations that he physically abused several women that he dated. In a report in the New Yorker magazine, the women said the abuse included hitting, slapping, and choking. Harris Kluger, whose group Sanctuary for Families provides services to victims of domestic violence and sex trafficking, is still trying to fathom how the man she viewed as a champion for the rights of women could have had such a sordid personal life.
It is a stunning betrayal. It's hypocrisy. It's, to say the least, disappointing and really not easy to comprehend in any way.
Schneiderman has denied the allegation, saying he was involved in consensual role-playing with the women. Harris Kluger says what's even more difficult to understand is that her group worked with Schneiderman when he was a state senator to craft a law to make strangulation a crime.
He was involved in helping to get that legislation passed. So, of course, it's kind of stunning to hear that he actually engaged in that conduct with the women that he was involved with, since choking and strangulation are strong indicia of lethality when you're evaluating what has happened to a victim of domestic violence.
The leader of the New York chapter of the National Organization for Women, Sonia Osorio, was also at the press conference last year.
Thank you so very much, Attorney General Schneiderman, for taking on this important cause. And thank you so very much for connecting the dots with what is happening in our nation.
Osorio says she and her colleagues at the NOW offices are trying to come to terms with it all.
Does it feel more like a betrayal because there just aren't enough male leaders who champion women's rights? So we put everything into the small number of men who do?
NOW has called for a special prosecutor and endorses Governor Andrew Cuomo's decision to appoint the Nassau County District Attorney, Madeline Singus, to oversee an investigation into the charges. Osorio says it's further proof that the reckoning of violence against women is not abating.
It's a perfect storm of the public being aware, coming to a decision as to what is tolerable in our society, and being very clear on that.
Harris Kluger, a former judge and prosecutor, says there are complications with pursuing a criminal case against Schneiderman, though, because of a statute of limitations for assault charges. But she takes solace in the fact that Schneiderman survived as attorney general for less than 3 hours after the article was published before he was forced to resign.
Seeing his very swift fall will hopefully have a chilling effect on others who would engage in this.
She says the former AG clearly had his demons, and she credits the women who survived the alleged abuse for taking the risk and speaking out. For 51%, I'm Karen DeWitt.
And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1504.